Welcome to the Cool Tools Show. I'm Mark Frauenfelder, Editor-in-Chief of Cool Tools, a website of tool recommendations written by our readers. You can find us at cool-tools.org. I'm joined by my co-host, Kevin Kelly, founder of Cool Tools. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, it's great to be here.
In each episode of the Cool Tools Show, Kevin and I talk to a guest about some of his or her favorite uncommon and uncommonly good tools they think others should know about. Our guest this week is McKinley Valentine. McKinley is a writer and editor from Melbourne, Australia. She makes The Whippet, a newsletter of interesting bits of science, history, and unsolicited advice. It's one of my favorite newsletters, so it's a real thrill to have you, McKinley. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for joining us. I know that it's early morning your time, but we're really delighted and eager to hear the tools that you have for us.
I hope that someone will find them interesting.
Yes, yeah. I'm sure they will. So, McKinley, just why don't you get started with a newsletter? Besides your own newsletter, you're also a fan of newsletters, and you have one that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I actually wanted to put just the entire medium of newsletters as my tool because I do love them. But I've chosen Book Riot's science fiction and fantasy newsletter, which I think it comes out about twice a week. And it just gives recommendations of science fiction and fantasy books, pretty much. It has the cover, it has the blurb. They're usually either new releases or there'll be some sort of themed grouping, like books that are set in the desert or books where the protagonist is such and such. And the reason I like it is because I read pretty much everything on Kindle now. And I like that. It's convenient, but you really miss the feeling of being in a bookstore and just browsing and seeing a cover and reading the back and thinking, I'm going to give it a shot. And you also miss that kind of just the general sense that you know what books are out or what's going on in the world of books specifically.
You mean in the way that you can see other people, what they're reading by holding the book, you can tell, well, all these people are reading this book. So there's a little bit of a signal there.
Yeah. Right. And just sort of seeing what's on the shelves and seeing what's changed. And, you know, you hear an author's name and you kind of know who that is, even if you haven't read the book. That sense of being part of the reading community, which I do miss from not being in bookstores. I certainly have that with music now. Something will come out and I'll be like, I have no idea what the kids are listening to these days. But I'm sure there's great newsletters for music discoverability as well, but I don't know them.
Is a Book Riot written by one person or is it a group of people who do it? Do you know?
As far as I can tell, Book Riot is a massive website because they have a lot of newsletters for other genres like mystery and thriller and romance which I can't speak to because I don't get them, but I imagine that they are fantastic. When the Hugo Awards came out, I looked at the shortlist or the nominees and realized that I'd already read about 80% of the books, and it wasn't because I'd tried to read, oh, what are all the big important books? They'd been mentioned in the newsletter. I thought they sounded interesting, and so I read them, and I felt really good about having, kept up with the what's going on in book world.
Can you recommend a science fiction author that people might not know about that you enjoy?
Okay, I read a book that was, I don't think I would have ever read otherwise. The premise sounds odd, but basically it's a bunch of teenagers who get stranded after the apocalypse on the back of a giant jellyfish.
And I thought of that exact same thing. No, go ahead.
And it's very realistic teenage dialogue, but half of it is them trying to get off the back of this jellyfish and they're watching the shoreline. And as you would do, I imagine, if you are stranded watching the same shoreline for a year, they all have their favorite house and they're like, oh yeah, when we get off, that's where I'm going to live and that kind of thing, which actually reminded me a bit of the quarantine feeling if you spend a long time in your house just looking at the outside street and that's your whole vision.
So that's a really fantastic suggestion. The Book Riot science fiction
SFF, yeah, science fiction and fantasy newsletter.
But you began by saying that your real recommendation is newsletters as a whole. So are there, let me ask you this. What is it about newsletters that you think is so great about?
Increasingly, no one is really going directly to blogs anymore. And a lot of some of the best blogs that I used to read are defunct now. And when stuff gets shared on social media, it's kind of beholden to the algorithm. And when people write things, they're kind of aware what's going to be shareable, you know, and people are only clicking on that one article. You have, it's the idea of bundling, which is when you used to have a newspaper, you would read the article that you actually wanted to read, but you might see three other that you would never known that you were interested in, but you read them because they're there. So newsletters recreate that. So you end up being exposed to stuff that you might not have clicked on if you'd seen it, but because it's right underneath the thing you were interested in, it's there. I think it's pretty similar to podcasts as well, in that you subscribe because, not because you necessarily want to hear about that one exact topic, but because you like the people's voice, you like their tone, you like the kind of vibe that they have, and you sort of trust them to talk about something that you're going to find interesting. Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of what we called, and got a lot of flack for back in the day, push media, the idea that you would have things kind of chase you or be sent to you rather than you have to go. So instead of having to go to the blog comes to you in the form of a newsletter.
Yeah.
So are there... Can you give another example of a newsletter that is sort of working for you, that's giving you the kind of stuff that a blog used to do?
There's one that I absolutely love called Small Town Grievances, which is basically sort of Bizarro World Parks and Rec. It's the fictional minutes of a town hall meeting of a very weird town where people have just the most petty kind of complaints. And it's a delight to read.
Okay.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
I guess it's a little bit like Welcome to Night Vale in different time, but that sort of.
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
So let's talk about something you like called the dot grid index cards. What are they and what do you use them for?
So they are, I mean, they're really just index cards that are with a dot grid background instead of ruled or blank. And
dot grid. Okay. So there's a grid, but the grid is made up of just the dots every 5 millimeters or something like that, or whatever.
Yeah. It's like a lot of bullet journals or journals in general now have dot grids rather than being lined or ruled. It's a good balance between, if you're like me and you don't have any lines, then your writing just goes on an increasingly downward angle as you get further along the page. But at the same time, if you have lines, you're really restricted in what you can do in that space.
Oh, okay. So it's a compromise.
Yeah.
Between the rigid order of lines and the chaos of
Yes. So I use them for, I started off with bullet journaling as my, well, no, I didn't start off. I went through about a million different attempts at note-taking and productivity system, and bullet journaling was the closest that I had to something that worked because of its flexibility, because you start again each time. So in a normal planner, you have the weeks laid out or the days laid out. And then if you don't fill it in for 10 days because you forgot, then when you come back to it, you have these 10 days with the dates on them kind of looking at you and making you feel guilty. Whereas a bullet journal, you start fresh every time and you make it whatever you need to be that day. But I was still having the same problems with bullet journals that I have with regular journals of not wanting to fill up the space unless it was something important enough, or still finding it not flexible enough. So I started using index cards, and that is so good for my brain in terms of being able to write to-do lists, because I can write down everything that's in my head and then I can split that up into a few different lists. So I'll often have a list for a specific client or a list for, you know, for this podcast, I had everything that I need to get ready before I go on this podcast. Or sometimes it's just, I'm feeling super panicky, so I need to write down, okay, here are the three things that I have to do before Saturday night, or I'm screwed if I don't do them. And so by splitting it up into all of these things, and then you can spread them out onto a table and you can hide the ones that you don't want to think about right now. And also because they're disposable, you can tear them up and throw them away when you're done. So I find that all of the kind of blocks that I have when I'm using a planner go away with index cards.
Wow. And are you using kind of standard index card size? Because I know that they come in several different sizes.
Yeah. Okay. You couldn't really use them for journaling or anything like that.
Okay.
But I think that a lot of people use a combination of something written down and, you know, Evernote, or I use Dynalist, but that sort of thing.
And when you're doing your own newsletter, do you use this to prepare for the contents of each newsletter?
Honestly, no. I do the newsletter pretty much. I have Dynalist, which is my note-taking app, where every time I think of something that I think is interesting, I'll write it down, which sometimes means I'll interrupt a conversation after saying something and then be like, oh, that was really smart. I'm going to write that down. Hang on. Which is quite an arrogant thing to do mid-conversation. But
So the one you recommended looks really nice, called the Strategist.Grid Index Card Deck. It's $9 for 100 of them. And they have rounded, like, radius corners, like a playing card, kind of. But they look a little bigger than a playing card.
So I actually haven't used those because the shipping to Australia is really expensive, but the ones that I do use are not amazing quality, and so they're not the ones I recommend. Baron Fig is very sort of well regarded in the notebook sphere, so those are the ones I would go for.
They look great. And do you have, like, a special way of keeping cards that belong together, like with a clip or a rubber band, or
You should, but what I have is a stack on my dining room table that sometimes gets spread out all across my dining room table and then shuffled back together again. The only piece of advice I would give is that you need to buy about 2 or 3 times more than you think you will ever possibly need, because otherwise you'll get back into that hoarding mentality of, oh, I shouldn't get rid of this. I should cross stuff out and you know what I mean? You've got to be willing to throw a card
waste
out.
Them. You have to waste them. Yeah.
That's
I'm a big believer really in waste.
That is great, great advice. Okay, so yeah, you're saying you use Oxford brand ones. Okay, very cool. I like those. Your next one is a kind of a noise generator called the MyNoise. Tell me about that.
So you've probably seen there's things like Rainy Mood, which is rain in the background, or Coffitivity, which has cafe background noise. Mm-hmm. MyNoise has everything. It has about 200 sound generators from an absolutely massive breadth, and they're all recorded in the field by the creator of it. He's been to the desert in the Middle East and recorded inside of a Bedouin camp, someone cooking on a camp stove. But then he sets all of those to individual little sliders, so you can turn up the sound of the camp stove, or the sound of the desert wind, or the sound of the rustling tent.
Are they all by one person, or is this kind of more aggregate or open source?
It's all by one person. He does sometimes hire people or send people out to hire specific to record specific areas, but it's pretty much just this one person as far as I can tell.
Wow.
And it's been going for a long time, which is how it's built up as many as it has. And then you can also set the sliders when it's something like rain sound. You can set it to white noise or pink noise or brown noise, or calibrate it to your specific headphones and things like that.
That's so cool. I'm listening to the Japanese garden one right now, and there's sliders, like you said, for waterfall, wind, bamboo leaves, garden tone birds, water stream. Wow, this is so cool. Cicadas, wind chime. And then you can set the slider bars to get the perfect mix, kind of like a equalizer.
And you can also set it to animate so that they shift and change randomly, so that it's never caught in, so that the soundscape changes over time. Because sometimes if you're working and you start to recognize a loop, then that can become a distraction.
Right. Good. And it's free.
Yes. There's if you donate, there's a few little bonus things you get, but 99% of it is free.
And it's on Apple Music, it's on Spotify, and there are apps for smartphones too.
I actually didn't know that.
Just looking at this. Apps for this is smartphones. Fantastic.
Yeah, I wonder how that works, because it seems like it must be streaming rather than downloaded, unless you download one of the sounds.
So nice.
Yeah, I actually was playing with it for a while with the rain. There seems like any imaginable rain pattern you could find or generate.
Yeah.
From the kind of roof, whether you do, you know, hard rain, spring rain, I don't know. It was amazing.
And there's also like Gregorian chants, or Himalayan, like tonal singing. I don't know what you call that. So there's a lot of variety. It's also really good if you play board games or RPGs to set background tones.
Oh, how clever.
So some of the soundscapes are not particularly soothing for that reason. I think they have like a haunted battlefield soundscape or something like that. My partner and I played Robinson Crusoe, which is a game where you are stranded on a desert island and it's very harsh and you have to try and survive long enough to be rescued and your resources are very low and that kind of thing. And we set the background to be, I love that board game. Strongly recommend if you're quarantining at home with one other person.
Cool.
So we set the background to kind of jungle sounds and howling winds and occasional thunder and storms. And it really, really ratcheted up the tension and the feeling that, you know, is our shelter going to be strong enough? Are we going to make it through the night?
That's cool. That's really fantastic. Huh. Well, that's a great find. My noise.
Yeah. Sounds good. So this is like, you're going to have to explain this. Skincare designed by Reddit.
Yeah. I realize how that sounds. So I am an optimizer, as I imagine many of the listeners to this podcast are. And if I buy something, I want to research everything about it and I want to know what goes into it and all of that kind of thing. And I want to get the best version of it, even honestly beyond the point where it's necessary or useful. And there are a lot of people like that on Reddit. So they started researching the science behind skincare. There's a couple of subreddits. Our skincare addiction is the main one. So the skincare industry is full of scammers, basically. They're just people who will lie and put anything in there. There's a whole lot of really harmful ingredients that are in skincare, and I don't mean that in a kind of, oh no, chemicals way. I mean things that smell nice but will age you faster, like citrus oils. So really stuff that you don't want to be.
That.
Yeah. They just will put anything on because people buy it based on how it sort of feels and how it smells and what the packaging is like rather than the evidence behind the ingredients.
Interesting.
So the subreddit started filling up with people who wanted to know and were talking to skincare companies and emailing them and being like, what's the pH of this product? You're calling this a vitamin C serum. What percentage of vitamin C does it actually have in it? Because often they will say it's this and then I'll just put the tiniest, tiniest drop in enough that you can put it on the label. And making spreadsheets where they recorded all of this information about all of these things. And out of that came two indie skincare companies that were like, we're sick of having to deal with the fact that every single thing that you buy is like 1% good and 90% marketing bullshit. And so they made kind of optimized skincare that only included ingredients that have a hard evidence backing, that are in exactly the formula and exactly the pH to make them work.
That's fantastic. You have evidence-based skincare.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah, and they've done really well. So Holy Snails and Stratia are the two companies. And Stratia is now in shops and stuff like that. And I think no one would know to look at the packaging that it was created by nerds on Reddit.
That's amazing.
Now, is this particular product being tested in some ways for its effectiveness?
That is a good question. And I don't know. I'm sorry. Although I will say that most of the ways that skincare is tested as a whole are, they're kind of fake. Like though they will give something to 100 customers for free. And then they'll say 90% of people said their skin felt softer. And you're like, that's not really like data. I don't know.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And what do you feel is it, so it's $27 for two fluid ounces, how long does that last you?
Oh, right. The specific product that I recommended was Liquid Gold. I recommended that because I am someone who will put on 15 different serums in the morning, but I know that not everyone wants to do that and nor should they. It's a ridiculous hobby. But Liquid Gold is something that rebuilds a compromised skin barrier, which a lot of people have because they use alkaline soaps that dry out your skin and things like that. So if your skin gets dry really quickly, or if it stings when you put products on, or it gets oily really quickly, there's a good chance that you have a compromised moisture barrier. And so this has the ingredients that are specifically focused on that. So I recommended it because I think it's something that a lot of people might actually use, even if they're not into the whole skincare thing. And it lasts probably, I don't know, 3 months maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it depends how big your face is.
Time. That's so okay. That's like a lot less expensive than I imagined.
Yeah. And if you were to compare it to, like, once you start looking into this, it's, I get so angry when I look at some of the skincare that is available from big brands. So there's, for example, there was this cult product called La Mer, which was about $120 for a single ounce. And it was basically very ordinary moisturizer with fermented kelp in it, which is quite good for your skin. But you can literally buy fermented kelp from a wholesaler for like no money, pretty much, and add it to Nivea yourself. And you have an exact duplicate of La Mer for, you know, $4 or something. It's outrageous. Whoa.
That's a good DIY recipe right there.
Is that something else that's on the subreddit? Would be do-it-yourself versions of these?
Where yeah, you actually absolutely.
Are buying the ingredients in bulk or raw? Yeah. And then
you've got to be a bit careful because you have to use preservatives. If you just mix them without it, you can get into trouble. But they have heaps of instructions on all of that.
That sounds good. So let's talk a little bit about The Whippet, which is the newsletter that where I learned about you. It's a fantastic newsletter. You have always have such fun things. Like I think in the most recent newsletter, you talked about a quarantine game where you walk with your partner silently instead of talking, and then only when you get back do you talk about the things that stood out to you.
Yeah. Which actually I took, and I did give credit, I must admit, but from The Art of Noticing, another newsletter. So
yeah,
they should get
credit. Yeah. Who's been a guest on our show too, Rob.
Yeah, I listened to that episode.
But you're like a curator of really cool stuff, the newsletter, things that is very eclectic, and it's always a surprise. And the only other kind of newsletter that I think reminds me of the same thing is like The Browser, which is something that Kevin gave me a gift subscription to.
Yeah, I subscribe to The Browser. The Browser's great. So this is sort of that thing between newsletters and blogging. When I, you know, I've had a few sort of blogs that didn't last more than a few issues because they'd always tell you, you have to find your niche. You have to find your one topic that you're going to talk about. And I couldn't do that because I'm interested in pretty much everything. And I wanted, you know, that feeling when you read something that is so interesting that you immediately want to grab the nearest person and say, guess what I just learned? That anything that makes me feel like that goes in the newsletter, basically.
And you read pretty widely. So I see that you're maybe among the last book readers of the world, but are you reading, you mentioned blogs. It seems like maybe you're still going to the remaining blogs. You have newsletters. What else are you spending time delving into? Do you spend much time on YouTube?
Not a huge amount. There's a few people I like, the kind of bread tube lefty political people, which I don't talk about politics in The Whippet, not because I'm not political, but because I just think that you get completely overwhelmed with political news when you try and engage with any kind of media whatsoever. And so I wanted to provide something that you knew was not going to remind you about coronavirus or climate change or whatever is happening. Again, not because those things don't matter, but because other people are handling that. And I didn't think that I needed to.
Right. What does your typical suite or diet of intake, information intake, look like?
A lot of it is Twitter, but I follow accounts like Haggard Hawks, which posts etymology, for example. A lot of accounts that are really focused to sharing cool things they found online, for example.
So actually, I don't know about these Twitter feeds. So these are people, individuals, or are these kind of groups that are sharing an account?
Individuals, I would think.
So individuals who are like you are kind of surfing through the world of information, finding cool things and posting them.
Yeah, but they're often limited to one area. So sometimes it's like the Ashmolean Museum, which is a museum in Oxford, shares bits of information about the exhibits that they have on.
Okay.
Sometimes people will be like, I'm into Victoriana, and they'll share, you know, just dresses from the Victorian age or something like that. So they're often quite specific.
And how many Twitter accounts are you following?
Oh, of those, probably about 100 or something. I don't know, a lot. And then what happens is someone will post something like a picture of a cool looking spider or whatever. And then I will go to Wikipedia and look up that spider and find that that actually has about 10 more cool facts about it. One thing I will tell you that I've learned from doing the Whippet, every single animal has more than one thing going on. Like every time someone shares a fact about an animal, like there's a spider called the Rufus net casting spider, and it sets up a little sort of targeting space. It puts a web on the ground and then it puts a little white dot of feces, which it uses as a targeting tool. And then it goes above it and it waits for an animal to cross over it, and it throws the net down on top of it. So I thought that was cool. And then I looked it up on Wikipedia, and it turns out this spider also has eyes that are so sensitive that it can see galaxies that we can't see at night.
Oh my God.
Every morning its retina is burned out, and every night its retina regrows again. Whoa. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah. So the way I discovered the similar fact about the individual species from when we were doing all species inventory, and I realized that every single species on the planet is hacking the rules.
Yes.
They're finding some loophole somewhere. And they're exceptional, and that's why like every single taxonomist is in love with some creature, and that creature is the most amazing creature in the world, and it really is.
Yeah,
it really is, because one by one they have found some other weird hack that you would have never thought of, and they're all hacking.
Yeah,
the rules of life somehow or other.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that finding that. I think quite a lot of what goes in the Whippet ends up being through fact-checking just one simple thing. I always fact-check because there's a lot of like fun facts that get shared on the internet that are not correct or that are missing some important context.
What? Is that true?
And
are you sure? I remind you of that famous, was a cartoon about the guy staying late at night. He's telling his wife or whatever, he can't go to bed because somebody's wrong on the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
So XXK.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. XKCD. Yeah. McKinley, how long have you been doing the Whippet?
I can tell you almost exactly if I could look it up, because it was about a month before the Trump election, because that was the point where I was like, I can't read any more news right now. My brain is killing me. And there needs to be, even in Australia, like 50% of our news is American politics. And so
really,
yeah, huh. It's,
well, I'm sorry to hear that.
No, that's okay. That's, American cultural hegemony. Sorry. I don't know another way to put it.
Yes, true. Yeah, I'm sorry about that too.
No. Historically, we did have the best TV, and no Australian, when we were growing up, wanted to watch Australian TV. And we were always like, where are the American shows? Now Australia has good TV where we've developed that. But yeah,
cool. What's a good Australian television series we should know about?
There's a show called Glitch, which involved people returning from the dead in perfect health but with no memory, and that's the mystery.
And I saw it. It's a good one. I love it.
Yeah, I can't really say a lot more about it, but
yeah, it's amazing. It's a really good one.
Okay, Glitch. Yeah,
I recommend that one too.
All right. Okay.
So McKinley, how many subscribers does the Whippet have?
Oh, it's very small. It's about 1,700 right now.
It deserves to be much bigger.
Thank you.
It really does, yeah. That's a healthy amount, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it started out with 100 people, all of whom were my friends. So I feel happy about it.
Well, I used to run a small magazine, and we used to say, It's a small circulation, but it's the right small circulation.
Yeah.
And it was true, because we actually had a lot of very influential people who were doing things and making things happen. And they weren't, they weren't millions. They weren't even hundreds of thousands, but they were I think we had 40,000. So we had the right 40,000 people, and that makes a huge difference if you have a high quality audience.
Yeah, are you referring to Mark as high quality audience? Because I think that's correct.
Oh, yeah. Mark is a high quality. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure all your other audience or fans are also high quality as well.
I think they are, but it's also, I always feel a bit creepy. I don't know if you have this with your newsletter, where you see someone subscribe and sometimes you know who it is from their email address, usually because it's at anon@gmail.com. And when someone subscribes, you can see everything that they click on and when they've opened it. And I don't like that. And right. I wish I didn't have the access to that information.
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't. That is true. You can with all the stats that they have like that. Nowadays.
I always think like you could set up some kind of trap if you ever wanted to, like, I don't know.
Oh, I see. Have some weirdly like weird newsletter and just have people. Yeah.
Like a really specific thing, like advice for people who are cheating on their spouses, click here or something.
Yeah. This is like the making of a good thriller novel.
Yeah. I was going to say, this is a pitch for a Netflix series.
Definitely. That's cool. I like that idea. That could make a great series. Well, McKinley, this has been so much fun talking to you and getting to know you and other things that you're interested in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, it's your host, Mark, and I wanted to thank you for listening to The Cool Tools Show. And I also wanted to let you know that we've got a lot more going on at Cool Tools than just this podcast. We also have the Cool Tools website, which has a new tool review every day. And you can get there by going to cool-tools.org. We also have 4 different newsletters that you can subscribe to, and you can subscribe to those from the Cool Tools page. We have this podcast that you're listening to right now. We also have a YouTube channel where we review tools. Check that YouTube channel out by going to youtube.com/cooltools. And one of the things I'd like to ask you is if you're really enjoying everything that we are producing, go to our Patreon page and support us there. You can sign up and give us as little as $1 a month, and that would mean a lot to us. The money that we get from Patreon goes towards a lot of things. We transcribe our podcast interviews so that you can read them online. We pay for editing of our podcasts and for our videos. We pay our contributors. We have video production costs. We have equipment costs. We have hosting costs. And the money you give us through Patreon also goes to support Cool Tools Lab. Anything you give is a huge help. And one of the things that we do is if you are a contributor to Patreon, we'll give you a shout out on air. And so I have a few people here to thank this week. Mark Lyonaj, Micah Gates, Monty Zukowski, Patrick James McNally, Robert Cohen, Scott, Spence Lloyd, Steve Avery, Steve Golden, Steve Levine, Tom Hess, William Phillips, Aaron Nipper, Dharab Patel, Glenn Mercer, Jay Walker, Jeff Bonaire, Ryan Jarrell, Pat Daly, Patrick Kennedy, Troy Wallett, Mike Camerate, Nicole Harkin, Tim Youssef, Scott Reed. Thanks all of you for supporting Cool Tools. And if you would like to have a shout out, go over to the Patreon page and sign up. And thanks for listening to the Cool Tools Podcast. We'll see you next week.